thanks everyone for coming to this early morning session. I'm going to be talking about postpartum care rates and postpartum contraception rates in Medi-Cal, which is California's Medicaid program. And I'm the only one up here, but I'm obviously not the only one who worked on this project, so I want to take a moment to acknowledge the co-authors who are listed here and also my colleagues who helped with this work as well. I have no relationships to disclose. So I'll be talking about postpartum care rates in Medi-Cal, postpartum contraception, and the characteristics associated with receiving postpartum contraception, as well as the types of contraception received, and talk about some of the implications of these patterns on postpartum care quality improvement efforts. So postpartum care is the care that a woman receives in the days and weeks following delivery. And in the U.S., that typically includes a visit with a clinician in the 4 to 6 weeks after delivery. And there are different guidelines on what those visits should include, but they typically include things like checking in on breastfeeding, screening for postpartum depression, checking in about family planning, looking at recovery from delivery and complications from delivery, ensuring follow-up on pregnancy-related conditions that include things like gestational diabetes, and doing medical handoffs for women to primary care providers. In 2012, the Centers for Medicaid and CHIP Services, or CMCS, launched the Maternal and Infant Health Initiative to improve perinatal outcomes. And one of the goals of the initiative is to improve the postpartum care rate as a way to reduce maternal morbidity and to improve the quality of maternal and infant health care. And specifically, they're looking to increase by 10 percentage points the rate of postpartum visits among pregnant women in Medicaid and CHIP in 20 states over a three-year period. And they're going to be using a healthcare effectiveness data and information set, or HEDIS, measure of postpartum care. And in 2012, the National Committee on Quality Assurance, or NCQA, showed that the Medicaid HMO rate of postpartum care was 63%, and that's remained pretty steady for the last several years. So the HEDIS postpartum care rate is looking specifically for the percentage of deliveries with a postpartum visit between 3 and 8 weeks after delivery. And depending on the way that the measure is calculated, it's looking for one of the following things. So either notation of postpartum care, pelvic exam, evaluation of weight, blood pressure, breast and abdomen, cervical cytology, IUC insertion, and diaphragm fitting. And important to note that only one of these has to be found for a visit to be considered a postpartum visit. And you'll notice that while some of the items that I talked about as being part of the postpartum visit are on this list, it's not a complete list by any means. And one thing that we noted as being particularly absent is family planning. IUC insertion is here, diaphragm fitting is here, but that's really only a small fraction of the types of family planning, counseling, and contraceptive dispensing that can happen in the postpartum period. And postpartum contraception is a really important component of postpartum care for two primary reasons. One, as in any setting, contraception can help prevent unintended pregnancy, which is important for any woman who wants to prevent pregnancy, but is particularly important for women who have medical conditions that might put them at risk if they conceive. For example, women with diabetes with uncontrolled sugar levels can have risks for both themselves and for their infants if they get pregnant. The second reason that contraception is important is because of birth spacing. The interval between pregnancies, between the end of one pregnancy and the conception of a second pregnancy, if that interval is too short, the woman can have risks for herself and for her infant. Some of the outcomes associated with short interpregnancy intervals, or IPIs, are low birth weight, small for gestational age, and preterm. Because of these health risks, Healthy People 2020 has set as one of its objectives reducing the proportion of pregnancies conceived within 18 months of a prior pregnancy. In California, previous studies have shown that women who receive contraception within 90 days of delivery are more likely to have an interpregnancy interval of over 18 months. And because that 90 days encompasses that time when the postpartum visit should be happening, you can see that that visit is really an important opportunity to get contraception to a woman. So in California, there are about 500,000 births each year, of which about half are paid for by Medi-Cal. And most of those women are eligible for postpartum coverage up to the end of the month of the 60th day postpartum. And that coverage does include postpartum care and family planning services. Family planning services are available both through Medi-Cal, and through the Family Pact program, which is California's family planning program, Medicaid family planning program. And while most women in the postpartum period get their contraception through Medi-Cal, Family Pact is still an important safety net provider because some women are going to lapse out of coverage, and so they may not have anywhere else to go for contraception. So our questions for this project were, what is the HEDIS postpartum care rate for women with Medi-Cal-funded deliveries? And we were looking at 2012 for this data. And because we were interested in kind of that gap between what is included in the HEDIS definition and what might be covered through other kinds of visits, we also looked at how many women had family planning visits that didn't meet the HEDIS guidelines. And we also wanted to see who received contraception within 99 days of delivery and what kind, and who was most likely to receive contraception. So I'll talk about the overarching methodology first, and then I'll get to the different methods for each of the rates as I get there. So we used the HEDIS 2013 methodology for finding deliveries in paid claims and managed care encounter data. And in California, Medi-Cal enrollment is separate from Family Pact enrollment, so we used a probabilistic linkage process in order to link deliveries in Medi-Cal to any claims that they might have had in Family Pact. And we took demographic data from Medi-Cal and Family Pact enrollment, and those included age, primary language, race, ethnicity, and we also looked at whether they were enrolled in aid codes, portions of Medi-Cal that cover for women who are eligible for Social Security, supplemental security income, so we use that as a proxy for disability. We also wanted to look at whether diabetes status played a role in postpartum contraception rates, so we used diagnosis codes found on paid claims data and encounter data to identify women as either having gestational or preconception diabetes. So we looked at three different versions of this definition of postpartum care. So in the first definition, we used just the HEDIS strict guidelines and their administrative rules about finding a visit. And then we looked at a second definition that expanded to include family planning visits, and that was either a visit with a clinician where contraception was dispensed, or there was a clinician visit and a diagnosis code for family planning counseling. And then the third is we looked for any other office visit with a clinician in the postpartum period. And all of these were restricted to the 21 to 56 days after delivery, and all of these visits had to be found in paid claims and encounter data. So we excluded women if they were not continuously enrolled in Medi-Cal in the period before and after their delivery, and this is consistent with HEDIS methodology, and that accounted for the majority of the exclusion from our population. And we also excluded women who were eligible for Medicare crossover or who had a share of cost required of them during their enrollment, because that results in incomplete claims data, both those scenarios. So our final population was 226,000 women. So you can see here that the postpartum care rate for Medi-Cal is 48.9%, which is quite low compared to the national averages. The NCQA reports 63%, as I mentioned earlier, and even higher than that in commercial plans and HMOs. And part of the difference between these rates can be attributed to the fact that we used administrative-only data, and for many of the plans that report to NCQA, they are using both administrative and chart review. So you can see here some of the different stratifications that we looked at. So women who were in fee-for-service Medi-Cal had the highest rate of postpartum care at 55%, and managed care women had a lower rate of 43%. And part of this can be accounted for by the fact that encounter data is not necessarily always complete, so that might be part of this difference. Women who were continuously enrolled in Medi-Cal but had switched between delivery systems, so either between fee-for-service and managed care or between multiple managed care plans, had the lowest rates for this stratification, which might point to issues with continuity of care. Latinas had the highest rate of postpartum care, and Black women in particular trailed the rest of the race ethnicity groups at 33%. And women under 20 had the lowest rate of postpartum care at 44%, and women over 30 were slightly more likely to receive postpartum care. Spanish speakers, who make up a large portion of the deliveries in California, had the highest rate at 57%, and English speakers were at 42%, other language at 47%. Women with preconception or gestational diabetes both had higher rates of postpartum care, which is a good sign that they're coming back for important visits after their deliveries. And women who were in disability aid codes make up a pretty small percentage of our population, but they had a much lower rate at 31%. So if you look at those expanded definitions of a postpartum visit, if you include family planning visits, you see that an additional 7% of women are having at least one component of their postpartum care covered. And then if you look at the third definition that we showed of any contact with a clinician, then you see an additional 7% on top of that who had some contact after delivery. And that's really a potential for, there's a possible missed opportunity there, where women are coming in and seeing a clinician, but they're not having postpartum care covered. And there's a possibility that they could have that information covered for them while they're in the office, or that that provider could refer them out for services at someone who can actually provide them. So overall, you can see that any definition of postpartum care that we use here, the rate is still very low. So to look at the postpartum contraception rate, switching gears, we looked for any procedure codes or drug codes that indicated that contraception had been dispensed to a woman. So we looked for the most effective method that she received in the 0 to 99 days after delivery. We took the population from the postpartum care rate and excluded an additional 23,000 or so women who were not continuously enrolled up to that 99th day postpartum, and that led to a final population of 203,000 women. So 16% of women received a highly effective method of contraception, which includes long-acting reversible contraceptives and sterilization. 24% received a moderately effective method, so those are your hormonal methods, pill patch ring, injections. And 7% received a less effective method, so this is barrier methods and spermicide. And so that means that more than half of women didn't get any method in the 99 days postpartum. So women who were in Medi-Cal during the time of their delivery, but their coverage lapsed during the 99 days postpartum, but were still enrolled in Family Pact, actually had the highest rate of postpartum contraception at 63%. This doesn't necessarily mean that they got their contraception through Family Pact, but it might suggest that women who know that they're going to lapse out of coverage, or women who are unsure of whether that coverage is going to continue after 60 days, are maybe more likely to use that coverage to get contraception. Latinas had the highest rate of postpartum contraception at 50%, and they make up such a large proportion of this group that they're really driving the rate up, and you can see that the rest of the groups have a much lower percentage of contraception. And then by age, women at the two extremes of age, those under 20 and those over 40, were least likely, had the lowest contraception rate. Spanish speakers had the highest contraception rate at 53%. Women in disability aid codes, again, had lower rates than their peers who were not in disability aid codes, so 36% versus 47%. And women who had diabetes, both forms, preconception and gestational, had higher rates of postpartum contraception than women with no evidence of diabetes. And if you look more closely at the different types of methods that were dispensed to women, you can see that there are also some differences. So this looks at highly effective forms of contraception, long-acting, reversible, and sterilization. And women who were in fee-for-service, Latinas, women over 30, women who spoke primarily Spanish, and those with diabetes had the highest rates of postpartum contraception. Of tier 1 postpartum contraception. So the third component of this was to look at the adjusted odds of receiving any postpartum contraception. We adjusted for the type of system, delivery system that they were in, age, and for this we looked at race, ethnicity, and primary language as a combined variable to account for some collinearity that we were seeing between those two variables, and diabetes status. And we were also interested in parity for this. We thought that would be an important factor in whether a woman got care and also contraception. However, we only had that variable for a small subset of the group, so we have two different models, and I'll talk a little bit about those. So in our first model, we took the population from the postpartum contraception rate, and then we excluded anyone who didn't have a HEDIS visit or a family planning visit. And the reason we did this is because the percentage of women who had postpartum contraception and didn't have a visit was so small that we wanted to focus in on those women who actually had contact with a clinician to see if that visit was having some sort of, if that visit was, if for those women there was higher odds of receiving postpartum contraception. And so keeping with that methodology, we also excluded women who got contraception before their first postpartum clinician contact. And then the second model is much smaller, so we only looked at 15,000 women who we had parity data for it, and that's just because of the months of data that we had from birth certificate data, not about other, you know, like missing variables in general, just that was who we had it for. So So this is the first model. I'm not really going to spend time talking about this one. I put it in here in case you want to go back and look at it or if you have questions. But the other model had such similar results, and because it did include an important variable parity, so I'll talk about that one, and I'm happy to answer questions about the other if you have them. So I'm going to talk about the factors that increase the odds of receiving postpartum contraception first. So women who were in managed care and women who had lapsed Medi-Cal status but who had family pack coverage had higher odds of receiving postpartum contraception than those who were in fee-for-service Medi-Cal. And for the women who were in that lapsed family pack category, almost twice as likely to have postpartum contraception. Both groups of Latinas here had higher odds of receiving postpartum contraception, about 25 to 35% higher odds than white women. And women under 20 had higher odds of receiving postpartum contraception, as did women who had had two or more live births, both about 20 to 25% higher odds. And then on the flip side, Asian Pacific Islanders and women who identified with some other race ethnicity, which included Native American here, had lower odds of receiving postpartum contraception, about 25 to 35% lower odds. And women who were over 30 had lower odds of receiving contraception as well. So women who were 40 and above had almost 40% lower odds of receiving contraception than women who were 20 to 29. And you'll notice I haven't mentioned diabetes status here. It's still in the model, but there was no difference between women who had gestational or preconception diabetes and women with no evidence of diabetes. They were no more likely to receive contraception. So there were some limitations to our analysis. Because we're using only administrative data for this, we had a limited set of covariates that we could work with. So things like nativity, cultural, and qualitative factors that can't be captured in claims data couldn't be controlled for, and parity was only available for that subset. And we didn't account for contraceptive methods that didn't generate claims for the woman. So if a woman was relying on lactation amenorrhea method, we don't know that. Or if she had a partner who was sterilized, we also weren't able to link that partner to her, so we wouldn't know. There was also variation across different managed care plans within California. And we are interested in those differences. It was just outside the scope for this particular analysis. So even though there are those limitations, we think that these findings are still important for what they show us about the rates as they are now and for the questions that they raise about how to move forward on improving the quality of care. So there are opportunities to improve both the postpartum visit rate and the postpartum contraception rate. Overall rates are low for both of these measures, and there are disparities in those rates too. We saw that some women are much less likely to come in for a visit, and that really raises questions about what the barriers are for providers in having providers and hospital systems and plans in getting women to come back for a visit, and also what barriers the women might be facing in actually coming in. And then we saw that there's that group of women who are, you know, seeing a clinician but not getting postpartum care, and that raises the question of how those women can really be reached and what can be done to make sure that they actually get those services covered while they're there or in a subsequent visit. The other important component of this is that, you know, we saw that contraception and family planning services are really not part of the HEDIS measure, and, you know, that raises questions about, you know, what does it mean for these women to be coming back? Is it really going to be doing something for them that improves pregnancy outcomes going forward? Contraception is so important for birth spacing. Birth spacing is so important for the health of future pregnancies that if that's not being covered, are we really doing enough in that visit? And like I said, it raises questions about the quality of postpartum care. So what's happening during those visits? You know, I don't have this here, but you know what we did do a little bit of analysis of what kinds of care are covered during the visit, and it's that cervical cytology is only a small section of it. It looks like it might be a bigger component, but most of these women are having some sort of larger postpartum care covered. But is that really covering all the components that should be covered? And it raises the question of if we're working to improve the postpartum care rate, is that really going to have an impact on maternal and infant health if we don't ensure that the content is really being addressed. So I am happy to answer any questions, and I thank you for being here and listening. Thanks.
Thank you, Monica. Can I ask the first question?
Sure.
So I was interested that 53% didn't get any method of contraception, mm-hmm. and actually I was at dinner last night talking to some people who about family planning, and a nurse practitioner who was saying that the doctors where she works all say that they provide, they offer family planning and they do family planning counseling and education. But when they talked to the women in the waiting room, the women said no, they didn't get it. So she's speculating that it's, you know, it's a, on the checklist and they check off, they say, oh, do you want family planning? And the woman says no, and check that they talked to them. So did you have any way of, what do you think about that? And do you have any way of looking at that, or have you looked at discrepancies between what women think they're getting and what providers think they're giving?
Yeah, that's really interesting. We didn't look at that for this analysis because we were just really looking at claims data. Yeah, but there, you know, all of the managed care plans, they are doing like chart review in order to report to NCQA, and so they report much higher rates. So I'm wondering if that might account for, you know, if they are going through this checklist and writing down in the chart that they talked about family planning and that's being covered.
But not really educating on LARCs or, you know, some of these other methods that
right.
Women don't know a lot about.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I think that would require, you know, more analysis at the chart review level. But that's a really interesting question. Yeah.
Other questions? Anne?
So we've done some work about the early administration of Prolaris, or the administration of the human hospital, and found that a lot of families are going to the numbers that 50-75% of them are not postpartum level, but in the hospital. And once we tell them an analysis, do you capture those women for the motivation?
Yeah, so we actually looked at any postpartum contraception in the zero, so like at delivery up through 99 days. So it didn't.
You were able to capture that.
Right, yes. Yeah. As long as there was a claim for it, paid claim for it, we would capture it. Mm-hmm. Are you thinking it's part of that? It's part of the global.
But it might be an interesting thing for you to look at to see.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked a little bit about just interest in general and what's being dispensed right at delivery as well, so that would fit naturally into that. Yeah, thanks.
Other questions? Okay, well, thank you, Monica.
Thank you.
At the end, there may be questions for the panelists, so we'll have another opportunity to ask questions.